it's the small talk question. What do you do for a living? I have a podcast. Yeah. It's about people who almost died. That's the first time anyone's ever said, oh, I almost died.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's
the first time I feel like I've had a response like that to like anything like that. Usually I'm like, oh, cool.
And like, that's morbidly what I want to hear. Like, I want to hear, oh, I almost died. I have a story.
At one of the many wedding events I attended this summer, I ran into Jessie Shelton. Before we get into what happened to her, please indulge me just a little musical theater talk. If you're not familiar with the musical Company, it's about marriage and commitment and turning 35.
What is a children's theater's version of Company like?
Oh, well, our Black Box Productions were pretty damn professional. Because our educator slash director, Matthew Howe, who has since passed away to cancer, sadly, he was giving us really mature material because he believed in us. He believed, like, of course, you only have your life experience up to this point, but, like, you're smart kids. So Company, yeah, like, I don't think I understood maybe what it was fully about.
Yeah. It's very much
now
like,
I'm like oh...
You're in your mid-30s, specifically.
Yes. Yeah. Like, so at the age of, like, 18, I was Amy, the one who's just, like, blah, 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 having a freak out.
Oh.
But it was
so
really
fun. You got to do, not well, you didn't get to do, but you would have
Well,
done.
I did for half the run, but they all voted, in light of events, that they would not continue.
This is Live to Tell, the podcast where I talk to some of the bravest people who have been through the most horrifying things and lived to tell the tale. I'm Caitlin Van Maul.
Jessie grew up as a musical theater kid in Minnesota.
And my parents are both musicians. I started with violin from a very young age because my mom was a violinist. And then I got into dance. And then eighth grade is when I discovered theater and thought, oh, I can put all those things together. Of course, the violin was like practice at least 3 hours a day. And, you know, the standards were high. And my dance days were like ballet conservatory. So like everything. And now I'm in therapy and talk about my perfectionistic tendencies.
In August of 2007, 18-year-old Jessie was just weeks away from starting her freshman year in the prestigious Carnegie Mellon Musical Theater Program.
How many people get into Carnegie Mellon, like that program?
My year, there were, I think our class total was 9 for musical theater, and there were 3 women.
Surprise it!
Yeah.
On August 1st, Jessie was driving from work to the theater for that night's performance of Company. She had one of those jobs where, like, someone's mom worked as an accountant or a lawyer or something, and they hired teens in the summer to move around files in a warehouse. Shout out to dresser Hassan Kaywood, where I worked for several summers doing this. Anyway, Jessie's castmates also worked with her, and normally she would carpool, but...
And I wanted to, like, finish up the last whatever. So I left a bit later than everyone else. It wasn't far, like, on either side of the bridge, these places weren't far. But they were over the bridge from each other.
The Mississippi River runs through Minneapolis, and Jessie was taking the I-35 bridge to get downtown to the theater.
I drove onto the bridge, and it was bumper-to-bumper traffic both directions. I don't know how many lanes are on each side, but, like, you know, I'm looking around, and it's mayhem. So already, like, kicking myself because I'm like, oh, I don't want to be late, but it's like, I'll still be okay. And then all hell broke loose. And I just remember, like, a cracking sensation. I mean, like, cracking. Crack seems like too small a word for it. It was, like, more like tectonic, you know, crackage. And then I felt like I was on, like, an amusement park ride because I just felt kind of like a tilta.
The bridge was collapsing with Jessie and hundreds of other people stuck on it.
But I was oddly at peace. I was like, wow, I don't know what's coming. I hope it all turns out okay. And then I started rolling backwards, not quickly. I think it was slowly as I remember, but of course time could have been super sped down in the moment. And then boom, I don't remember anything else.
Wow. So you have no idea like how you got knocked out.
No.
The bridge was under construction for routine repairs. Crews had unloaded gravel and dirt onto the bridge, and with the trucks and machinery, the bridge was holding more than 250 tons more weight than normal. Also, the bridge was completely full with rush hour traffic, plus the bending gusset plates that had been noted 4 years before the collapse that finally gave out under all the weight.
So then when I finally saw pictures, I'm pretty positive it was my car. I mean, it's hard to tell with all that wreckage. Yeah.
It definitely like looks like it had just dropped into the water. It was like, because there were cars just like sitting on there.
So mine was one of those. And I know that I dropped 70 feet.
Since the collapse, Jessie has been able to put together some pieces of what happened to her after she lost consciousness.
So there was this one guy that I met later on, and this guy had been conscious. Like, he was well enough off after the collapse. He was able to get out of his car and, like, check on people, which, like, wow, like, that's still a really traumatic event. And then he looked at me in my car and left me because I was knocked out and he thought I was dead. But I think the story goes that when he encountered the firefighters, et cetera, who were coming to rescue people, he was like, I know there's a woman in this Honda over there, blah, blah, blah. And so they got me out. And I believe my mom said that from when they got me to when they got me to the hospital was pretty quick. So it did move pretty quickly.
Meanwhile, at the theater,
my dad was in the orchestra. He played trumpet for the show. And my dad, meanwhile, is like, when it's like, where is she? Like, Jessie's never late. Like, she hasn't texted anyone or called anyone. Something must be going on. So my dad is, I heard later, outside the theater, like pacing, trying to get in contact with me. I can't imagine what was going through his head. I still haven't really talked to him about it. I know my mom said she finally took a deep breath once my toes were wiggling. It was like, okay, good. She's not paralyzed.
What is the first thing you remember after you woke up?
Ooh, at this point, it's kind of hard to say because of like what people have told me and what I remember. But I think I remember waking up. I think the first person I saw was actually my childhood best friend, Laura, because she got to the hospital, I think, as soon as she could. My parents, like, I don't know what that chain of communication was, but I don't know how they even knew where I was. I also remember, this is so stupid, but I had this Calvin Klein bra and I really liked it. And all my clothes, they just had to cut off of me. And so I have never found that bra again.
You are not the first woman who has been like, I was wearing my favorite bra or underwear.
That's
and they
so
cut it
funny.
Off of me and I was so annoyed.
You know, we prepare ourselves to lose a lot of things and like make peace with a lot of things. But like our underwear, like, you know, it's like, come on. But just to go down the memory train a little bit more, it was really interesting who showed up to check on me. Random people that I had been in, like this guy was in French class with. He had also given me a ride home because I got my license super late. There was one time that both my parents were out of town and one of his parents lived close to me. So like he... I don't know. I guess my mom set it up. I don't even know how that happened. But yeah, he gave me a ride home a few times. So like, you know, maybe we were a bit more involved than just like regular classmates. But
he had a crush on you for sure.
It was also weird because I was like dating someone at the time who was a classmate of a friend of mine. They were both at the University of Minnesota. And like, we weren't that serious. But then like, I almost died. And so then it was like weird because I was like, we're kind of forcing this into like, he was emotionally affected, but he really was like, it was not that serious.
Yeah. But I mean, it's hard. Well, we went through this together. And so,
yeah.
And I committed to being there for you.
Yeah.
And so like, it becomes very serious, very fast.
Right. And yeah, he came to visit because of what had happened really. And like met my parents and like, that wasn't really it, you know.
How long did you guys stay together?
It was like all long distance. It was probably to like September.
Oh, okay.
I'd say. And I was the one who was like, hello, what are we doing? Yeah. If it could have been anyone else, that went through this with me. I would have preferred that.
Because what Jesse was now going through was healing from fracturing her back in 4 places.
So my fractures were impact fractures, which I think in some ways for healing was better. They didn't have to like realign anything per se. But yeah, shit got squishy. But yeah, looking at x-rays, I mean, it's like not like I looked at x-rays before. Like I didn't know what my spine looked like before.
Right. What part of your back was it?
L1, L4, lumbar.
Okay.
T6 and T8, thoracic.
The 3 parts of your spine are the lumbar, the lower back. Then you got your thoracic, the big middle part, and cervical, the neck part, and the most dangerous to injure.
I didn't have any cervical issues. I did fracture a couple or a few ribs. I had some like from my seatbelt, wear your seatbelt. I had some like bruising initially, I think.
Yeah.
And suffered a concussion. Not, I guess, like a horrible, horrible concussion, but perhaps enough to sort of knock out some of that memory.
Yeah.
They talked about the potential of surgery, which we ended up not, I didn't have to have, which also helped my healing process go more quickly.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what that might have looked like. But yeah, like the neurologist would come in a lot. I had like a breathing thing so that my lungs would like not lose all their power while I was bedridden.
Oh.
So I had to like, I think it was breathe in and keep the ball floating for a while, you know, and I had to do like a series of those whenever I thought of it, basically. So my mom was like always hounding me about doing my breathing stuff.
Mom, get out of here.
I just remember for a long time, it was like in order to be comfortable, people had to like sort of roll me over and like prop me with pillows on either side. Like I'd call the nurse in, I guess, when I needed to switch, or they'd just switch me.
Now you'd think with 4 spinal fractures, you're gonna be in the hospital for some time. But the thing actually holding Jesse back from going home was her stomach.
They actually kept me in the hospital a lot longer because I couldn't keep any food down.
Was that a reaction to the pain meds?
Could have been.
Yeah.
Could have been. I'm easily like motion sickness and like I'm just prone to nausea, I guess. Yeah, I was in the hospital for like either 7 or 8 days, but I think definitely 2 or 3 of those were because I just couldn't like eat anything. And then without going into too much detail, once I got home and I was eating like delicious ratatouille, actually, my mom made ratatouille and I still fondly remember that because it just was like exactly what I wanted. It was like warm, comforting, vitamin rich, all the things. But I had some BM problems. Mm. Let's just put it that way. And that was horrible on top of being in a brace with all the pain already. Like, it's the last thing. It's awful. So to everyone out there, when you have to be on pain medication, make sure you are balancing that out with I don't know what, but figure it out because it's just you don't want to be in that situation. I cried when I finally went to the bathroom. And that's all I'll say about that.
With Jesse's injuries, fulfilling her place at Carnegie Mellon was out of the question.
I was so keyed up. You know, it's like I was going to finish company and have a crazy rest of the summer and then go out. And so, like, I think, too, it was an amazing thing that they – and, of course, they're not, like, monsters. But the world does move very fast. So when they said, oh, my gosh, take care of yourself, defer, come to us next year or come to us when you're ready.
Did you have to, like, re-audition?
No.
Wow. So they, but like, I mean, you really could have not come back this late.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was like pending that, I suppose, like, because yeah, it's like, I obviously this has never happened before. And so who knows how I would spring back.
We'll be back after this break. But if you don't like breaks, you can get ad-free episodes for just $2 a month at patreon.com/livedtotell.
So obviously this happened like right before you were about to leave home and start your adult life. How did it feel to have to put that on hold and go back and be kind of dependent on your parents again?
I'm sort of a Peter Pan in that I was never in a rush to grow up.
Same.
and it was funny because like when it came time for – my friends to go to school. One of them, well, two of them were going to the University of Minnesota. And so we were talking about like wanting to room together so that I at least could feel like I'm striking out on my own in some way. Mm-hmm. And thankfully I was able to take some classes at the U. So I felt like I was doing something and that I had like, I was stepping forward in some way, even if it wasn't how I had planned. So I think that helped. And ultimately though, I started just hanging out at home more and more and like just wanting to like chill with my mom. So I kind of like, it was nice to have that space.
Yeah.
Part of it was that one of my roommates was a nightmare. I love her as a person, but it was horrible.
Not always good to live with.
Yeah. And so, you know, I was just like, okay, I did this and I'm glad I did it. And like, no, I don't need to do it anymore. So yeah, but I was bitter. I was really bitter. I remember I was driving around the lake and I think I saw like a young person crossing the street and I was just like, you're in perfect health and nothing's ever happened to you. Which of course now I know that what you see is not the whole story. But a bitter teenager, it doesn't matter, right?
No, like, they are a symbol of what it should have been.
Yeah, exactly. I think I've let go of that a bit more. But I do remember like in February, it was around my dad's birthday. And I think I like went with him to a convention or something because, again, I was hanging out. And I remember being really depressed for the first time in my life. I definitely had a period where I would cry myself to sleep. This was like months after. This is when the brace was off that, you know, I would definitely have those moments of just like, whoa, like this big thing happened and not knowing exactly what the future was going to look like. But beyond that, just being like, that was such a violent thing to happen to my little body.
Yeah.
And I've since had on and off struggles with depression and also what I've come to learn is very much anxiety that, you know, has similar symptoms, whatever. But I think a lot of that is not because of this event, but I do think other parts of it are. Because, I mean, your sense of reality is completely turned upside down. Now that's happened to me in other ways where I've experienced that. But like, yeah, definitely at that age, it's like, what? This isn't how it's supposed to go. Like, why is this happening to me? You know, like.
Yeah. And like as a teen, you're invincible. Like nothing. Yes. Nothing bad's going to happen to you.
Exactly.
Until bridge collapses. And
yeah. Yeah. And of course, that's a very privileged mindset for me.
Of course.
I can't help but acknowledge that is because there's some unbelievable stuff that's happening in young people's lives. But yeah, up to that point, like I said, like I got to do the things I wanted to do and it just felt like, okay, I'm doing all the right things. And so all the right things should happen. And they had been.
Did you go to therapy at all?
No. And it hasn't even come up so much in therapy in recent years. I kind of wish I had at this point. I think I probably would have gained a lot of perspective and also just like bonded with people, as disparate as our lives might have been, that we shared this huge event. Like, I think that probably would have been really healthy for me. But I just at the time felt like I'm healing. I want to be forward thinking. I want to like stay positive. Not that going to therapy wouldn't have been positive necessarily, but obviously it would have been
but
dealing
the point
with a lot of stuff.
Is to poke, touch the hard stuff.
Yeah.
And so you do have it acknowledging the bad. So
yeah.
that it becomes positive, but like you have to be in the bad to get the good.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think because I couldn't really remember anything, I was kind of like, I mean, like a lot of people are known to say, I don't know what I would talk about in therapy. But it was very much that because, again, there were lots of people who were like floating on their cars or floating on other bits of things. Like, I hope that they all got the support they needed. There were offerings of that. Like there was like group therapy and I'm sure there was individual therapy that, you know, lots of resources that were given. But I was just like, I think I just want to like focus on getting better and see where that goes.
Did your parents kind of treat you more like preciously after this happened?
That's a very good question. So I am the baby already, mm-hmm. and I am the baby girl with an older brother. And my older brother always seemed to be more like waiting to like flee the nest and, you know, go off on his own. Whereas I was like, hey, I'm fine chilling. Like, I like hanging out with you guys. I haven't like talked to them about this a lot because Midwestern. And also like, it's all good. But yeah, I definitely think that when we've had times when we haven't been in as close of contact, like in my 20s, there kind of was a period where I just didn't check in with them as much, you know?
Yeah.
They would never say it maybe, but like, I think that probably hurt more than it might have if something like this hadn't happened,
you
know? And these are all questions. Like, that's just my assumptions of, because they're kind of both big babies with like a bit of a hardened deal with it exterior, you know? So yeah, I think
also,
they're
also like good for them for letting you go.
Yes.
And not being like,
well, yeah. And so in that respect, I don't remember them ever like being like, are you sure you want to do that? Or, oh, that sounds kind of dangerous. Or that they very much like, yeah, have let me live my life. And that could have gone a very different way because they absolutely could have been like, oh my gosh, we need to shelter her. Like, we don't want anything else to happen to her.
Now that she had a year on her hands, Jessie needed to get to work to get back to the physical shape she would need to take on the dancing and acting and singing of her college program.
What was your physical rehab journey? How does one heal from a broken back?
Seriously. Well, nobody knows. They didn't give me any PT. They were basically like, I came back in for my like checkup after, you know, the stipulated months of what, like the time it would take for the bone to heal. And they were like, the bone will heal twice as strong as it was before. It's the nerves that are an ongoing, and still to this day, like sometimes my back will just get insanely itchy. And like early on before I learned that, like I definitely would like scratch myself. So that's just my life now. But yeah, they were just like, okay, you're good to go. And I was like, not only am I like, what? But also I'm like, as a performer, I'm like, what?
but good to go do therapy or good to do, good to do what? What do you mean?
So I like, well, first of all, I did some acupuncture and some craniosacral therapy. If you've heard of that, it's all about like sort of getting the chi to flow in the right direction. I actually had friends that I ended up finding out they went to the same practitioner, who is the sister of a woman that my mom played in the orchestra with, Small World. They went to the same person and would often go before big tests and found it really helpful, or a big paper, just to like focus.
What is like a session like?
You're on your back and it's a lot of like they take your head and they sort of like move it around, sort of literally like listening to the energy of your body, I think. And then like a lot of stuff like hands on and over, like sort of redirecting the flow of things. It's very woo woo, but I really helped. Also stuff like how muscles can be like on diagonals with the body. So if you like touch, you know, this side on the front of the body, it'll help to release something on the opposite side, on the back of the body idea. So it's just really about like, I don't know even where, what the roots of it are. I'm pretty sure they must be in some form of Eastern medicine, et cetera. Because yeah, it's really about like how the body works, how the body flows. So I did lots of sessions of that. I also, my dad, what would he call her? Her name was Dr. Carol. But she was an applied kinesiologist. The thing where like literally they like put their hands like this and they have a like supplement in their hands and then they just sort of like tap you. And then it's, and they'll have you stick your arm out and then like see how strong you are in relation to like what they're holding. But it's pretty wild because certain things like my arm was staying up and other things my arm would go down right away. So she put me on a lot of different supplements.
And she was just holding them?
Yeah, it's, you'd have to look it up. It is bizarre. My husband's also been to one.
I mean, I believe this is the thing. I just never heard of this.
Yeah, yeah. So I tried a lot of alternative medicines for pain management, first and foremost. it's always good to like give yourself a robust foundation, you know, but it did get to the point where I was taking so many pills that I was like, my system, it's hard on the system. Even like trying to take calcium supplements to help me regenerate the bone stuff. It's like calcium's really hard to like digest. It's like tough on your stomach. So like when you can get stuff from food sources, blah, blah, blah. But hey, it was all worth a try.
She did also go to one actual doctor. Well, depending on how you feel about chiropractors.
My mom still goes to him, Dr. Hills. He was a bodybuilder. And then now he's a chiropractor and a physical therapist. So I would go to him for adjustments and he would give me like some exercises.
Yeah.
Now again, 18, are we good at doing our exercises regularly? No. But
38, are we good at training?
It always feels good when I do it, but I'm like, do I have to get up off the couch?
But whatever she was doing was working.
But basically, I was able to, after like 3.5 months in a brace, I then was dancing again. Like I signed up for some classes by November. And of course, I couldn't do, like, there was one thing that they were like wanting us to do, kind of a layout thing. And I was like, that doesn't feel good. But
I'm going to pass on that.
Yeah, I was like, I got it, you know. But I think I was so excited to like move my body again. And of course, there was a bit of disappointment based on where I had been and where I was. But at the same time, like, it's that whole new normal thing. It's like, would my body hurt as much sitting on the floor for a long time as it once would? I don't know. I'm older now. Like,
yeah.
You know, so it's kind of like I haven't spent too much time in that what if place, for better or for worse. It's just, you know, it's just not really a good use of time.
The I-35 bridge underwent yearly inspection and since 1991 had been found in poor condition, noting, quote, superstructure has advanced deterioration. Members may be significantly bent or misaligned. Connection failure may be imminent. I'm no engineer, but that sounds bad. The 2006 report added that a, quote, replacement of the entire structure would be preferable, end quote. If you want a full description of what exactly caused the collapse and a better understanding of what a gusset plate is, I've linked to a helpful video in the show notes that will explain everything. But basically,
I don't know if it was the city or the construction people or both or whatever. It's like, people knew that it was not structurally sound with all that equipment plus the traffic, without limiting the traffic. Like maybe if they had tried to do that, it might have changed or it might have just happened later. I don't know. Like again,
yeah.
The what ifs, not super helpful. But the fact that it was known and they continued was just like such a slap in the face.
Had you known anything about the bridge not being safe before?
I don't think so. Not until the aftermath. I think maybe from the lawyers. Or maybe from a news article that came out. I'm not sure. But yeah, I was like, because it's one thing if like, again, shit happens. But in this case, I was like, 13 people died and so many more were injured. I don't remember the exact number of that. But like, regardless of whether I was one of them, it's just like, that is so fucked up.
Yeah. This was preventable.
Yeah, exactly.
There were several lawsuits after the bridge collapse, with the engineering company, the state, and contractors. The total received by all 145 injured and the families of the 13 people that died was $95 million. The new I-35 bridge opened on September 18, 2008, just over a year after the collapse. But Jesse hadn't waited that long to get back to driving.
I was like, when I got back to driving and I was able to drive in my brace, but I was like, if I were in a car accident now, I'd like decapitate myself. Like this is
this doesn't seem safe, guys.
Yeah, no, I didn't do it that much, but I mean, I also was like, yeah, I want to get my autonomy back.
Yeah, totally. Was it scary the first time?
Yeah, weird. Like the first time I went over the bridge, and I was in the driver's seat and I felt the change in just the little, I don't know, the ground isn't as deep anymore, you know? Like I remember noticing that. And I used to be really adamant about people wearing their seatbelts. I remember a friend of mine in college, like, didn't. And I got in a full-blown argument with him. I was like, don't you fuck around with that.
Yeah.
Put your seatbelt on. Accidents are never planned. But yeah, if you can do anything to offset your chances having an issue.
Drive safe, guys.
We'll be right back. But also, if you don't like the ads, you can get ad-free episodes for just $2 a month at patreon.com/livetotell. As fall 2008 approached and fulfilling her spot at Carnegie Mellon was getting realer and realer, Jesse got anxious. It would all be taken away again.
Also, when I took that trip to visit my aunt and uncle,
Jesse stayed with her aunt and uncle in Israel that summer.
And then I got back, I started getting very, like, I was kind of weird, like, coming home and then, like, leading up to driving out to school because I was terrified something else was going to happen that would keep me from going, or, you know, and that's sort of, I see my 0 to 100 black and white thinking in that. At first, I was like, oh, I paid my dues now. Like, I'm pretty good on the accident train for a while, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, that's not the way the world works. And so then there's also this, like, of course, this is going to happen to me. And, but, you know, so we've navigated those waters over the years. But yeah, I mean, I think I was just, like, really excited and also so nervous too.
Were you nervous about how intense it was going to be on your body?
Yeah, I think at that time, I try to remember that this is a good way to think. But I really was of the belief system that, like, if I do my best, it's going to be great. Like, I'm going to deal with whatever comes, and I deserve to be here.
And the time finally came for Jesse and her dad to drive from Minneapolis to Pittsburgh.
How did it feel to finally go to school?
Surreal. First of all, two people who ended up being, like, my best friends for at least the first chunk of school, and one of them throughout, we lived together for 2 of the 4 years. They had done the pre-college program and had, like, taken it upon themselves to, like, stalk everyone who was incoming, basically.
Yeah.
And so they, like, totally zeroed in on me as soon as I showed up to orientation. And, like, my dad dropped me off and then, like, took off. Some parents hung out for a bit.
Yeah.
And these, so kids, I was just like,
I see all these, like, kids moving into college and then, like, their parents take a photo of them, like, with their bed all made up and, like, room, like, and my parents threw all the shit in the room and then were like, later, Gator. And
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I spent the rest of the day by myself unpacking.
Yes. Yes. And that was, yeah, that was very much my experience too.
Yeah.
You know, my dad, yeah, yeah. I think my dad helped me. Actually, did he though? Or did he just kind of, like, because I also,
I hope,
like,
he, I helped you this, lift things.
I don't know though. Not because he wouldn't, but I might have been like, okay, I got it. You know, like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that was an element of it too. Like, okay, like, finally here.
Yeah.
Let me go. Let me see what this is like.
But anyway, back to her two friends that warmly stalked her before she arrived.
But yeah, so those two, like, they very much were like, are you Jesse? And, like, and that's how it began. But yeah.
So they knew about your back.
I think so, because all that stuff would have been pretty fresh on, like, Facebook and all that thing back when we were using Facebook.
Jesse got through college without any more metaphorical rugs being yanked out from under her. Or any more literal bridges collapsing under her.
Do you have any, like, PTSD from it?
That's a good question. It's hard to say. Yeah, I have to wonder about my relationship with fear. And because on the one, it's like, here's another thing that, like, through the healing process, like, people using that catch line of, like, live every day like it's your last, or, like, asking me if, oh, are you now living every day like it's your last? And I'm like, no, like, that's, like, like, we can't. What are you like?
Yeah.
You have to live your life. You have to pay your bills. Like, you have to, like, do your laundry.
Yeah.
You know,
I would never go to the dentist. Like, what do you mean?
Right. Right. It's like, that doesn't really, of course, like, seize the opportunities, like, notice the beautiful little things, whatever. Don't be angry all the time.
Sure.
Yeah. So in terms of, like, that suddenly feeling very vincible, shall we say, rather than invincible. And my, you know, how I often refer to it as my brush with mortality, that sends a lot of questions up into the air for me of like, oh God, what might happen if I do this? Or like, oh my gosh, maybe this is going to happen. Or maybe more of that worst case scenario catastrophizing. Mm-hmm. I have to wonder if that comes in. But then again, even as a kid, when my mom, because my mom didn't go away from home a lot, but one time she flew to like Kalamazoo, Michigan for some like concert or something. Mm-hmm. And I was like, when are we going to hear from her? Like she was going in an airplane, like what's happening? And then when she flew to Spain for like a, you know, concert series, and I was like, what if something happened to her plane over the ocean? But, you know, so it's like, I've always maybe done that. I also think I've been very suggestible though, because people like to read into my accident and what I might've been feeling and how that might be affecting me now. Mm. And then they'll like ask me a question or like a leading question. And I'm like, oh, maybe. Wouldn't that maybe never cross my mind before?
Would make sense, but I don't know.
Yeah. But it's also kind of interesting because like a couple years ago, my best friend from childhood, we were talking about all sorts of things, just like life updates. And she said like, that was a really traumatic thing that happened to you. And I hadn't really been, like I've been talking about it more lately, either because I've realize I've never told certain people who I'm really good friends with, or like it's come up in other conversations. But before that, I hadn't really spent much time thinking about it specifically. Mm. So when she said that, on the one hand, I was like, oh yeah, dramatic. But I also was like, oh shit, yeah, like I haven't maybe spent enough time untangling that for myself.
Sure. That's always the like weird thing is like, am I okay? Or is this gonna like one day something will happen and it'll all just like come back up again?
Yeah.
Like, are you a good Midwesterner and shoved it deep down, so deep down? Or are you actually just like, no, I'm like pretty chill about this actually.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really, it's hard to say because like, little things can trigger something that like maybe are very clearly associated with something, or just a general feeling of panic or unease. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know. And so I think it's been good to talk about it though. Yeah, it's really hard to say.
Jesse graduated Carnegie Mellon in 2012 and went on to tour with Waitress as Dawn, star across Jonathan Groff in 36 Questions, the podcast musical, which I recommend you check out wherever you get your podcasts. And most notably, Jesse was in the original Broadway cast of Hadestown. She left the show for a while, but returned in 2024 as one of the Fates, and finally wrapped up her time there on July 19th.
Can we just talk about Hadestown for a minute?
Yes, why not?
I did just look through my playbills and I found the first with the original cast and you were a Fate. How are you feeling now that it's done?
Oh my God. I feel really good. I'm so glad that I went back in 2024. But yeah, it's because the first year was just so full of like personal and professional stuff. That building holds so much.
Yeah.
But I'm really glad I went back because it helped me to like return to it in a very different place in my life. And also to just like dig in a little deeper, like really like get to know people more. And because I think before, I mean, I was in the building so much starting in 2019 as a swing and mounting the show that when I didn't have to be, I would like go away.
Yeah.
You know? And even when we reopened, I still kind of like, you know, coming out of the pandemic, I don't know, it was weird. And so I still felt like I'd go to work and then go home. And now like, yeah, it's like those people, I dug in and had some good convos and really like connected with people on a real level that I hadn't allowed myself to before. It's not that they weren't willing or open to that. And everyone was always so loving and supportive. But, you know, you get back what you give, and that just whole energy exchange. So, yeah. And the final day, because I can totally freak out of like, oh, it needs to be perfect and this and that and the other. Some stuff happened, some stuff didn't happen, and it was perfect.
If I could afford the music from Company, I would definitely be playing the song Being Alive right here, which is about opening yourself up to love and relationships and how they're great and how they can also be messy and like annoying, but in a good way. And it's very life-affirming and invigorating, but I am on a budget. So here's Jessie with some ending platitudes.
To leave everyone with something wholesome, we never know what's going on for people. There are people with disabilities that you look at, and it happens all the time that people are like, what are you talking about? And it's like, don't attack them. You don't know what's going on. You know, and hey, that goes more broadly for just everybody being who they are. Like, don't fucking go after people for being who they are. But just to like have more space and more patience and more empathy for ourselves and for others, because we all go through hard times, even if our lives are blessed. So I think like being supportive, listening when someone needs you to listen, talking through stuff, even if you don't think you need to talk through it. It's all really valuable. And again, even though this happened to me when I was 18, I am still alive. And so as I get further into my 30s, like shit's going to keep happening and I'm going to keep discovering like, oh, wow, I've been hanging on to that for a long time or, you know, whatever it is, you know, not psychoanalyzing myself about this detrimentally. So, but yep. Just like acknowledging and owning what's happened, you know, I think that's a huge thing in terms of being able to like let it go or grow with it or grow past it or whatever the case may be.
This is Live to Tell. I'm Caitlin Van Maul. You can follow the show on Instagram and TikTok at Live to Tell Podcast. If you enjoy today's episode, please rate, review, and subscribe. It really helps the show. I'll see you in 2 weeks.